Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 450th episode of the Four Eastings Fire American Soccer Show. As we finish up our four show preview shows, as we talk about the 2020 MLS season to preview the season, we're finishing up the Eastern Conference. Let's go straight to our nation's capital. Joining me right now, he covers DC United, another SB Nation colleague of mine, and once again, it's great to have him on. Jason Anderson joining me right now from our nation's capital as he covers DC United. Jason, welcome back. How are you, and what's going on over there?
Dan, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on again. I guess the answer to the last question is a lot of stuff. we got injuries, players coming in. It's been kind of a wild one this winter.
I bet it has been. First things first, I think we have to talk about the obviously it's not the elephant in the room anymore because the elephant's been long gone. And of course Jason writes for Black and Red United on DC United for SB Nation. Let's just say that I am sad. I know I write for the Red Bulls. Obviously, I've been a Red Bulls fan, Metro Stars fan for a very long time since the league's inception. But, you know, no more Wayne Rooney, no more Luciano Acosta. Those two, of course, when you with Paul Arriola, you know, I thought was the big three-headed monster for DC United. I thought the return of excellence for DC United was in those three players, and sadly, it didn't even last long. It only lasted a season and a half.
It looked, when we got all three of those guys together, moved into Audi Field, it looked like it was all going to start happening. That first few months was pretty special. In the off season came, you know, the Columbus came in, knocked DC out on penalty kicks. Is pretty pretty dramatic. I would say that game was pretty wild. The winter came in and DC kind of decided to just stay the course. They said, this is good. Everything's going to be great next year. All we have to do is, you know, get some depth, but no real changes to how we're going to do anything. And for about a month, that was true. March of 2019 was really good. And then it kind of, that was kind of it. That was the high watermark, you know, teams figured out how to play against the attack, basically, is what it boiled down to. It kind of affected DC on both sides of the ball. Rooney and Acosta were not fast players. So going forward, you couldn't really hit teams on the counter very well. It was kind of predictable what they were going to do. It was Rooney and Acosta are going to try and combine because they're really technical. And if that doesn't work, then there's not really anywhere else to go. And then also without the ball, a lot of teams love to high press. You can't really high press with two of your front four being guys that are on the slower side. And it kind of bit them in both directions. So this year, things have been really remodeled. A lot of the guys are much faster. Ola Kamara is going to take over up top. He's much faster than Rooney. Edison Flores, Julian Gressel have come in. They're much faster than Acosta. They're much faster than Lucas Rodriguez, whose loan expired and he went back to Argentina. They got Yumil Assad back. He's, again, faster than Rodriguez as well. So it's a different style of play. It's a team that wants to try and do something else because last year everyone figured it out. And it, you know, I think, if I'm not mistaken, they had the lowest goal scored of anyone that made the playoffs. And that's probably not something that you can really stand pat on. You've got to improve that.
No, you have to. You got to find to improve that way. And like you said, they went over the guy at Peruvian International and Edison Flores. They made a deal with Atlanta United. They brought over Julian Gressel. What is it about Flores that made DC United go after him to, put him into the philosophy of what Ben Olsen wants to do at the same time for Julian Gressel too?
With Flores, it's been interesting because we've only gotten to see one preseason game of the six that they played. And come to find, everything we had heard coming in, I've seen him play for Peru. There he plays on the left wing. Last season with Morelia in Mexico, he was playing a number 10 or maybe even as a second forward. So that's the image that everyone had. Now this past weekend against Philadelphia, final preseason game that Ben Olsen has always treated like, this is the lineup I'm starting next week. He's on the right. So that's been kind of an interesting wrinkle that we haven't really had much to go on. We only have 45 minutes to really see him play. But he's got a really good quick burst, that first few steps. And so he always gets separation from defenders, whether he's on the dribble, whether it's, he makes a pass and then he gets away from his man to get the return pass. He can play really, really quickly. And so it's maybe not as showboaty as Lucho Acosta. He's probably not going to nutmeg as many guys, but he's probably be more effective. He's probably more likely to break through, get more goal scoring opportunities, break defensive lines and create for other guys. So, I think he's a more well-rounded player than the guys he's replacing. As for Gressel, I mean, you look at his time in Atlanta and he's one of the best chance creators in the league. And when you throw in, Ola Kamara is not as good as Joseph Martinez, but he kind of plays the same way. He wants to make his runs through the channels. He wants to run in behind. It's not a lot of back-to-goal stuff. It's a lot of making runs off the ball and trying to get into really good goal-scoring positions, I should say. And Gressel and Martinez pretty notoriously had an excellent chemistry. So I think that's the idea here is let's get that going down the right wing. Or maybe not on the right wing because, just like I said, Flores was on the right wing in that preseason game. It was Gressel in the middle, which apparently they aren't – I don't think they're too worried about it. I know in Atlanta some of his performances in the middle were not necessarily as impressive as when he was on the wing, but so far pretty good, both in training and in some preseason games. The verdict appears to be that he looks pretty good so far. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. They're still trying to, I think, figure out how these pieces fit together. But, from a talent perspective, I think they've gotten better despite not necessarily having the big names that they had last year.
You said there's injury issues. Obviously, we know about Paul Arriola. He got hurt, I believe, during the national team camp in that Be Friendly against Costa Rica. What other injuries have there been, and how is Arriola?
Well, Arriola got injured against Orlando in preseason.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my fault. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's more recent than even that. And unfortunately, from the story that he's told, is that he thought he just had, hamstring or maybe, something else up there. But the trainer looked at his knee and they said it's actually your ACL. So it's pretty big to lose a national team level player for anyone in MLS. So from that perspective, yeah, it's really tough because I like to think of Arriola as sort of a force multiplier for teams because he's so busy off the ball and he's always an option for his teammates. It makes it easier for them to do what they're good at. So if I'm Edison Flores, I'm Julian Gressel, or if I'm Wayne Rooney, I'm always looking his way because I know he's going to get himself open, do something. And maybe it's not spectacular, but he's going to do something. We're not going to lose the ball. We're going to keep the attack going and he's going to keep an option for me. United, fortunately, it's maybe the one area of the team where they could afford that big of a loss because you've got Gressel, you've got Flores, Yamil Assad, I mentioned him already. Ulises Segura is kind of a lesser version of Arriola. He played very well against the Union in that preseason game on the weekend. So they've got Emmanuel Boateng. They've got a couple of homegrown players that can also play wide. So fortunately for United, if they had to lose one person for the season, it was the area of the field that they could most afford to lose someone. On the other hand, Ariel is a big he's a big factor in the locker room as well. So it remains to be seen how they're going to handle that long term. But from the soccer side, it's not good news, but it could have been worse. If it were Kamara, if it were Bill Hamid, it probably would be worse news because of the lack of good replacements available.
Ben Olsen, I think right now, is the longest tenured head coach in Major League Soccer going forward right now. I mean, how long has it been? 5,000 years? No, I don't want to push it that far, but...
it feels like... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it goes back to the middle of the 2010 season when he became interim head coach. And then they gave him the job in 2011. This is year 10 as the official head coach, his 10th full season. I think that they probably have I think this is a year where it's kind of a two-pronged thing as far as whether that's going to continue or not. First, they've got to do better in the regular season standings. They've got to they got 50 points last year. They've got to increase that. They've got to win a playoff game, which they haven't done since 2015. And they've got to look better. It can't just be results. It's got to be an eye test thing. The team has to play more attractive soccer. However that gets defined, that's got to happen too, I think, for him to stick for more time. It does look like that's the plan, the attractive soccer part. They were playing high-pressing soccer. They were trying to build out of the back, making a real effort to drop a defensive midfielder between the center backs and then spread their fullbacks out wide and push them up, trying to emphasize possession, trying to generate more chances in transition, taking more risks. So far, that seems to be the intention. But, a funny thing happens with intentions because DC's tried this before. People kind of forget that Ben Olsen's teams don't always play defensively. Most of his seasons, they've come out and tried to play an attacking style. Sometimes it works for a little while. Other times it hasn't worked at all. For Red Bulls fans, I'm sure things like the 2013 and 2017 seasons, you probably enjoy talking about them quite a bit. Those were seasons where it did not work at all. So if it doesn't work again, that's probably going to be it for him. And if they have to sort of bunker their way to the playoffs, that's probably not going to do it either.
25 years of Major League Soccer, Jason, 25 years of DC United. obviously plenty of championships won in the earlier years, 4 MLS Cup titles, several Open Cup titles, Supporter Shields. There is a CONCACAF Champions Cup title somewhere, as well as the only Inter-America Cup that sadly is defunct, mm-hmm. We'll never ever see again. But out of all the years of DC United, which is the one memory that really gets you thinking, you know, the glory days of DC?
Ironically, it's probably 98, a year that they didn't win MLS Cup. I think that year's team was actually better than the rest of their 90s teams on the field. I think they were more entertaining. Unfortunately, they came up against, Bob Bradley kind of really made his mark as a coach in the public eye in that final leading the Chicago Fire, that a team that wasn't as good as DC. And he also knocked out a great Galaxy team that year in the playoffs as well. So, but the 98 team, I think, just in terms of style, the dominance, the sort of swagger that they had, I don't think it ever got better than that. For me, that was the year they won the CONCACAF Champions League. That was the year they won the Inter-American Cup. They won the Shield that year. They didn't win the Shield that year. That was the Galaxy winning the Shield. They were something special. But all those teams were really excellent. And, here we're kind of hoping to get back to something similar to that one of these days. But who knows? There's been a lot of change this winter.
I bet there has been. Jason, I know you got to run. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you during the season, and I'll see you down in Audi Field in April.
Definitely. Thanks for having me on again, Dan.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on. Talk to you soon.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Jason Anderson, Black and Red United. of SB Nation, my SB Nation colleague, as we continue on with the preview show here to finish up the Eastern Conference. And a recorded interview I have on my SB Nation colleague over at the Bent Musket, and that's Jake Catanese, who couldn't come on live. So here he is right now in a recorded interview.
This is Daniel Feuerstein once again, the American Soccer Show, as we will preview the Eastern Conference here, the final of four MLS preview shows on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Join me right now, my SB Nation colleague from the Bent Musket, covering everything soccer in the New England area on the Revolution, Jake Catanese. Jake, welcome back. And how has it been, sir, with preseason and the Revolution?
Oh, Dan, as always, I'm very happy to be back. And I think for the first time in a very long time, I can legitimately say the New England Revolution have had a productive winter off-season. I do not remember the last time those two phrases, New England Revolution and productive offseason, have been said. It has been perhaps over a decade.
It has been a decade. I mean, let's be honest here. You've had some great players and good players in the past, but unfortunately things have not come together. What is it like to have a mind like Bruce Arena? Now you're going to have, you know, a full year with him running the club after the Brad Friedel experiment did not work well.
You know, It's been, I want to say we're approaching about 9 months. Let's assume that he took over unofficially more in like summer, June type area. There's a new sense of urgency with the refs. And I think there's a sense of urgency that the club needed to have top to bottom in 2014, 2015, when they landed Jermaine Jones in the middle, they got to MLS Cup, and then nothing happened. And the team just started downhill. And that was the moment where, had there been that sense of urgency within the organization, whether it was from the owners, whether it was from the front office, that would have been the time to capitalize on the pretty, very strong core of players the team had 5 years ago. A lot of those players are still around. Diego Fagundes is still here. He's still under 25. Scott Caldwell is a seasoned veteran. Kellen Lowe, after a fashion, is still with the team. Obviously, what there in 2019. Teal Buckery's been still a major player. There's a new crop of homegrowns, Justin Renick, Damian Rivera, Nicholas Firmino. But more importantly, New England Revolution, for the first time in their history, have joined MLS 3.0. They have three designated players on the roster that I think might be actually worthy of the phrase designated player.
Absolutely, and I think when you have a mind like Bruce Arena, who has done this many, many times, DC United, New York Red Bulls, LA Galaxy, now New England Revolution, all I can say is that your team is going to get better 200%, and it's going to be worth every penny he spends of the Kraft's money. Now, talking about some players that have already departed of this club, no more Juan Agudelo and no more Cody Cropper. So that three goalie system is now back down to two. You know, obviously one of the three had to be moved on. And so far you still have Brad Knighton and you still have Matt Turner, you know, for playing in goal for this Revolution side. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. One of the three had to leave, and it was Cropper who made the move away.
Yeah, I think Matt Turner in the second half of last year was a goalkeeper of the year candidate, and arguably could have won the award simply on the about 20 starts that he made once Brad Friedel left. I'm still a big Cropper fan. I'm disappointed that it didn't work out with him. I still think that he's going to be a solid option for some, and I hope that if he's not getting playing time in MLS, that he gets loaned down into USL again like he did with Hartford, and he playing time, because I still think he's a very capable goalkeeper. Brad Knight, however, is just as solid as a number two veteran backup type as you can get. So if for whatever reason Matt Turner maybe it's with the U.S. national team for part of the summer. You've got the CONCACAF Nations League semifinals and whatnot in a couple of months. He was the number three guy in camp over the they do have a couple of newer players. Jeff Caldwell is the third keeper. They picked him up from NYCFC, and there is a new keeper from High Point. Name I'm going to forget offhand, but that's likely going to be more of a brand new U.S. one side for the Revolution. So Keegan Meyer from High Point is going to probably be the one of the mainstays on that USL one team. So a very interesting depth for New England in a lot of different spots because of the USL side and just the overall depth that acquired over on the roster for a couple of years.
Yep, absolutely. And once again, I think this roster is intact from last year, and it's going to be a very, very tough situation for any opponent, especially in the Eastern Conference. It looks like the Revolution are bound to do something magical here in 2020. But the one player I'm surprised they brought back, obviously maybe it's a good thing they brought him back, Kellen Rowe returns to the Revolution after, a crazy stint, spending half the year with Sporting Kansas City and the other half with Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, there's not much more of a fan base you can get besides Kellen Rowe. What on and off the field with the team, which has been tremendous, and that was a bit of a bitter departure last year. And the fact that New England was able to get him, and also Seth Sinley back in free agency, I think just both, again, veteran players, you are losing guys like Juan Aguilera, who's, was viewed as a bit of a utility attacker. Obviously, the Revolution left back was still one of the positions last year that was not really settled due to injuries and rotations and things like that. So I think having Kellen Rowe back is going to be tremendous. Whether or not he can be a starter with the designated players that are out, depending on what formation to use, you might see Rowe as more of a holding midfield in a 4-2-3-1. Maybe it's more of the box-to-box number 8 with a Carlos Gil or a Gustavo Bowe running as number 10, one of the bigger number 6s, the Hebo or Caicedo, Scott Caldwell alongside. There's a lot of different options that Bruce Arena has. I don't mind having versatility, particularly off the bench, but it'll be interesting to see what Rowe's role will be, whether it'll be a starter or if he's going to be one of those guys who would be a plug-and-play spot starter rotating around the attacking half of the field.
Now, talking about the kid that you signed, or the Revolution signed, in Damian Rivera. Now, I know the organization he was a part of back a while ago from the Providence, Rhode Island area. Damian Rivera's name is, of course, Derek Shazadi. It's Project Goal, who he was developed originally from. What have you seen about this kid that you liked? And, of course, probably he's going to get time with Revolution 2 and USL League 1.
Well, the big thing right now is that in preseason, he's come on and he's scoring goals off the bat. He scored today in preseason in a scrimmage against the University of Portland college side. Scored twice in preseason and he started. So that's three goals for someone who probably is not slated to get a ton of first team minutes at the MLS level. But goal scoring wingers are something New England certainly has right now in spades. If Rivera is going to be more of a utility midfielder, more of a Kellen Rowe type, the ability for him to be comfortable in front of goal and not have problems getting into the box, mixing it up, finishing chances, that's only going to open up more opportunities for him. The biggest thing for Rivera and for Mino and a lot of the guy and a lot of the draft pick, it's such a great group of homegrowns who's been able to stock up the past couple of years. Justin Renix needs a lot of minutes somewhere. Tejon Buchanan, I think, is a player who I think can be very productive, but again, can't get minutes at the first team with the departure Henry Kessler, the top draft pick from the University of Virginia. He might actually be slated to get far more MLS because of a contract getting nullified due to a visa problem, opening up a spot in the back line. So having the USL One team for New England be a game changer is only because it opens up more academy players to a lot more minutes. A lot of the homegrown players on the MLS roster now have a place to get a lot more minutes. And a lot of the draft picks who struggle to get either minutes off the bench or spot starts now will be able to get probably a couple of starts in home games, U.S. Four home games, a lot more often. So I think it's just a tremendous advancement for New England. A gigantic step forward, not only with the first team, brand new training center, brand new USL One team. There's a lot of things New England has been able to really raise the bar back to where the rest of MLS has been. The best of everything. The sense of urgency now with Bruce Arena at the helm, whether he was able to persuade the crafts were already kind of moving towards, even though the season was going to happen, but now we're doing these other things as well. So, like I said, it's a wonderful combination of things that are happening all in the season, and it's good things overall.
As you said, you got three designated players. Obviously, you've got Heal. You also have Gustavo Bo. Who is this Adam Buksa? Obviously from Poland, a man that Bruce Arena scouted and brought him over. What is it about Buksa that is going to add more depth and more danger to the Revolution in 2020?
So for the uninitiated, Adam Buksa is not exactly an unknown. He has stormed onto the scene a little bit. Hasn't made his full international debut with Poland, but he has been in their youth team for a while. He's from a team called Pogan Szczecin, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. At the time when New England signed him, he was the leading scorer, not only for his team, but I think the leading scorer in the Polish first division. So New England has sort of always lacked a true target striker. They've had people who can score goals. Charlie Davies has been, an effective goal scorer. Lee Wynn was an effective goal scorer, though he wasn't playing striker. Aguidello and Teal Bunbury have had minutes. But those guys are not the dominant 10, 15, 20 goal threats like Gustavo Bo and Adam Buksa could both be. I don't think both of them are going to score 20 goals, but I think both of them could potentially be a threat to put up those kind of numbers. Obviously, I think New England is still going to be a team that scores by committee, but that committee now has a lot more talent in the front lines than it used to, and it still has a pretty strong supporting cast. Diego Fagundes is going to be getting minutes. Kurt Campania is still very dangerous, and he's going to create problems and minutes for the team, depending on what wing he's going to operate on. So there's just a newfound sense of danger with New England where it's like, okay, you have to worry about a lot of different players, but you could always sort of focus on just Lee Wynn a couple of years ago. Now you can't do that. You have too many legitimate top-tier threats where if you take one away, two more are going to step into that space. So you really now have to, almost like you had to a few years ago, you still have to defend New England as a team. But now, I think they can create a lot more individual situations and little moments of brilliance. Gustavo Bo, in particular, last year, it sort of just created goals almost out of nothing when the Revolution were kind of on the break in situations you would think, like, oh, it's a 2-on-2 situation. Gustavo Bo just chipped the keeper from 25 yards. So it's one of those things where once New England and Bruce Arena figure out the lineup and the balance and how they want to play, it's going to be, at times, a legitimately scary lineup and a team that I don't think in October, if New England is hosting a game in the playoffs, whoever that team is coming into Gillette Stadium is going to be very, very unhappy.
I agree with you there. Jake, thank you very much for your time. Good luck in 2020, and I'll talk to you during the season. Thank you very much.
Of course, what do you have?
Jake Catanese from the Bent Musket, and now another recorded interview, Matt Ralph from the Brotherly Game on the Philadelphia Union, and here is that recording right now.
Daniel Feuerstein once again, the American Soccer Show, as we continue our preview of the 2020 Major League Soccer season. Joining me right now is my SB Nation colleague who covers the Philadelphia Union for the Brotherly Game. Of course, on the Philadelphia Union, it is Matt Ralph. Matt, welcome back. Happy New Year at MLS, and how are you, sir?
Great. It's great to be back talking to you, Dan, and I always enjoy our conversations as well.
Absolutely. You know, we were just...
conference.
Oh, absolutely. No, we're enjoying our conversations, of course, talking about Pennsylvania soccer and the great days of not just, you know, what goes on with the Union and the Red Bulls, but, of course, those teams in the Central PA, Western PA, the Riverhounds, the formerly known as the Harrisburg City Islanders. It's great. But the way that the Union ended their 2019 season, a crazy playoff win in extra time against the New York Red Bulls that went 4-3. Of course, you fell to Atlanta United, but still, though, the way that the Union looked in 2019, you have to say that, do you feel there could be the same thing going on in 2020, maybe a little bit better? Or what has been your impression so far of this offseason for the Union?
Well, I think it's hard to answer that question. I mean, I always say, like, it's hard to predict MLS from year to year. But I think the thing that, you know, from a fan standpoint, certainly, the finally getting that win was a huge lift to the fan base, to the city, but then also for a coach like Jim Kurt to kind of get that, you know, he's lost a few Open Cup finals out three. He hadn't had a playoff win with the team. So I think from a standpoint of just the momentum, the buzz around the team, the fan base, like that was a really critical thing to happen. It was also not a bad thing that we beat a team from, you know, I-95 rival. You know, obviously, there's two of those, or three of those, I guess, if you count New England, and or even four if you keep going to Orlando. But, you know, there was something about that, to have a home playoff game, which was a huge goal for the team going into the season. It has been a goal for a very long time, ever since, you know, 2011, when they got a home playoff game because there was a two-leg situation with Houston. But that was a big deal, and I think when I look back to 2019, I think about a lot of things that actually didn't go right for the team, and how, you know, Mark McKenzie had issues and was injured, and appendicitis, and, you know, he had a difficult season, was in the squad. You had, you know, a lot of situations where David Akam is on the team to start the year, he loses his father. You know, he ends up getting traded. There's just a lot of different situations that around the team that for a while there, guys were getting hurt. Casper gets hurt and then comes out for the injury and becomes this, you know, one of the top strikers in the league. Where did that come from? But there were a lot of things that kind of happened. There was a lot of adversity. But I think it also kind of showed that the team was moving in the right direction. And I think now, heading into the 2020 season, there's a lot of anticipation, obviously, because they did, you know, they kind of accomplished something they hadn't before. They had more points than a Union team has ever had before. But I also think that what made the offseason particularly exciting is that there's a lot of things that are happening that are not just for 2020, right? It's like they're kind of becoming a real club, in that they're signing guys, extending contracts. They're setting up a team for the future. And obviously, in soccer, you know, you can sign a 3-year deal. What does that actually mean? Because they could be sold. But it feels more like a real team that isn't just like basically dumping half their players in the off season and replacing them with new guys. There seems to be a direction and an intentionality to what's happening. Sporting director Ernst Tanner is making moves. Not getting big name players, but that's also not really what the Union are about. You can relate to that with Red Bull. And whether or not they're better or they're going to win MLS Cup or whatever, what have you, I think there's definitely a sense from this team that they're moving in the right direction. And even if they maybe even take a step back this year, there's a plan in place. And I think as you know, from a standpoint of following a team, covering a team, that's been really encouraging to see, because for so long the Union were kind of this club that, you know, was like, oh, here we go again, this experiment or whatever, this, you know, they're gonna get it right this time, and oh, we have an academy and it's still not working. So that's kind of where I see things right now. Like they didn't get worse. Maybe they're not. Maybe they won't get the same amount of points this season, because I feel like that was a high watermark. But I do think that they're moving in the right direction in that respect.
Well, I think that, you know, the majority of the roster is still intact, so I think that's always a positive. And, of course, you know, Casper is still on the club. You know, El Senor, I'm assuming, will still come off the bench now. I mean, at his age, it's, you know, I don't see him, you know, starting again, unless he's going to spot start every once in a while. But to me, it just feels like, you know, the roster's intact, 95% of it. I think bringing over Joe Bendick to back up Andre Blake was a smart move. You know, Bendick, of course, was with Orlando City at the time, and to bring him over, I think that's a positive move, because at least you have a veteran of this league. And not saying Andre Blake's not that great again, but still, though, if Andre Blake goes down to injury, you have someone like Bendick who's been around the block.
Yeah. Well, and you also have a promising young goalkeeper in Matt Fries, you know, who has a chance he'll be with the Olympic team if qualifying, and if they qualify for Tokyo. But I think, too, you know, Bendick's someone I've always sort of liked. He actually came over for Columbus last season. Was sort of a surprise, like, where did that come from kind of move, but he is one of those people where you like to have a veteran in your three that can basically, you know, if you need that person, he's going to jump right in and be a MLS-level starter, because he's proven that. But, yeah, I mean, definitely in terms of the roster, there's, I mean, Jamiro Montero was the big story of the offseason. No one expected necessarily for him to return, because he was on loan, 2 6-month loans last season. Really impressed in his time with the Union, but this has kind of happened before. Borg Duskow was on loan first season, and he was not retained. He didn't get. They weren't able to sign him to bring him back. But him, Montero, you know, they broke their record for transfer fees to kind of keep him in the club, and spent $2 million to do so. So I think him coming back was a really big boost. And so when you talk about the roster, as though it's not, hasn't been changed that much, the big reason for that is because Montero's back. And, you know, obviously Brendan Aaronson is back, you know, the 19-year-old, you know, U.S. men's national team midfielder. That's, you know, it's going to be a really important year for him. I mean, the big loss is really Harris Bedunian, and who's been getting a lot of he's been getting beat up a little bit since he left. I guess that happens. Players leave and people feel like they can be more critical of them maybe than when they're here. But he was a really key person in that team last year, and led the team with assists with 10. And then, you know, you lose a guy like Fafa Pico, who didn't have a great season, but who is, you know, was really a pretty strong locker room presence, somebody who speaks multiple languages. You know, it was just fun to be around. Someone who covers a team, and just, I think the players really liked him. So he's actually probably a bigger loss than people are talking about at this point, just because he didn't have one of his better seasons, and he didn't necessarily start every game. But I think that was also a big loss for the team. And then, but then you also have a lot of question marks coming back, which is why I'm hedging my bets a little bit. I think, you know, you assume that Brennan's going to have a better season. You assume that Sergio Santos, who basically had kind of a very uneven, getting little injuries here, not being fit here or there, that he's going to come out and really be the player they expected him to be when they bought him last offseason from a league in Chile, from a team in Chile. You assume Casper, if he's healthy, right, that he's going to be another, you know, 10 to 14 goal scoring striker with some assists to go along with that. And you assume that Andrew Wooten, who was not, did not really impress in his half season last year, that he'll have a full preseason, even though he's been a little bit injured. So there's a lot of things where you're like, okay, well, we might be assuming that this is going to happen, and that's why this looks like a really good team on paper at this point. There are a lot of positive moves, and a lot of the returning players that you wanted to have come back for a team to sort of try to replicate what they did last year.
Yeah, I agree with you about Madungeon and Fafa Picoult. I think those two departures could really throw a monkey wrench into the works for the Union for 2020, but we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. And then, of course, you know, Jim Curtin, like you said, he finally gets the monkey off his back. So what do you think he's going to have to do now to, you know, a repeat performance? Do you feel like, you know, is the supporter shield or bust? You know, it has to be more than the wild card round. I mean, does he have to win the East? I mean, where do you see Jim Curtin going from here now because of that playoff win that the Union finally earned for the first time in their history?
Yeah, I think that, again, I think that with, that's a word he likes to use a lot, again, talking like Curtin. I think one of the things with Jim Curtin is, again, I said it again, shoot.
it's okay.
That, you know, the roster build at this point is, you know, you bring in a guy like Matej Orvac. He's 21 years old. He's likely going to be the starter at the number six position. You know, he's 21 years old, right? I mean, he's got there's a lot of promise about him. You know, Brendan is starting at number 10. He's 19 years old. Yeah. So there's aspects of it where you could say, like, yes, he needs to finish in the top three and qualify for Champions League. And I'm concerned about how well they're built for an Open Cup run, just because, you know, you're limited to five internationals in an Open Cup squad, and they have a lot of their key positions are international players at this point. So I think really if they can kind of continue to be the team that they were last year and show that they've adjusted more to the style that Ernst Tanner wants to play, I think it's conceivable that they would finish around the same place, and that would still be, there could still be positives out of that. So I don't know that it's a make or break year for him. He did finally get a contract that lasted beyond the season. I think he's pretty excited about that. There's this sense of that he's not on a one-year trial, that they're really trying to build something for beyond 2020. So, you know, and they have a tough schedule to start the year. I mean, you could see them dropping a couple games early and people getting a little nervous about that. But I do feel like it doesn't feel like a season where it's like, if they don't win Supporters Shield, then Curtin's done, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. I mean, look, it's always a long season in MLS. You don't know what's going to come up, in games two, even games 15, 16, or 17. You know, you're going to have a rot. You're gonna find a way you're going to get a losing streak, and then you have to turn it around in some ways and try and make it into a positive streak. I mean, how many times we've seen the Union have a bad year, but they do better in the Open Cup? So, yeah, I agree. I understand what you're talking about, and we'll have to wait and see what Jim Curtin and his side is going to do here in 2020. Matt, thank you very much for your time. I always appreciate it. And I will talk to you during the season. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Ted.
And that is Mr. Matt Ralph talking about the Philadelphia Union as they move forward here, obviously. We'll see what happens going forward. And, you never know. A lot of questions. Maybe they've been answered, and maybe they'll continue on going forward, but still, though, it's a situation where Union have started to maybe put things together here. Maybe they'll become a force to reckon with in the Eastern Conference in Major League Soccer. Pardon me. A lot of questions still, I would say, you know, coming into play here, you know, especially like with New England, even though Bruce Arena is at the helm. But knowing Bruce Arena and knowing how tactical he is and how he gets his point across with his players, and they play tremendously well. You know, the Revolution right now are doing things probably that, they haven't done since, of course, the Twellman-Dempsey era. when they were together and they were just, you know, dominating. Steve Ralston as well on those teams. So we'll see what happens moving forward, and we'll have to wait and see what the situation will be. But still, though, it's very exciting and it's very fun when you are going to see these things happening. And once again, it's a situation where you have to go out and you're going to have to find ways to, you know, attack and just, you know, go and go get it. That's all you can really do. So there you have it. And now, of course, we're going to finish up with a official preview of New York City FC. And as we get ready for that one, of course, that will be with Michael Anderer from Blue City Radio as we wait for him to give a call and, you know, we'll find out what's going on with the club going forward. You know, look, they did very well on the road against San Carlos of Costa Rica. As we, you know, got to give them, you know, a lot of credit for going down to Costa Rica and to take on an opponent like that. But you know what? No more Dome Torrent and no more as head coach. And, of course, no more Claudio Reyna as technical director, sporting director, I should say, sporting director. Those times are gone. And the situation, once again, you know, are things going to remain the same? Have things changed? You know, new players coming in, old players leaving. But still, though, New York City FC always looking to fight, always looking to get their noses dirty and to become a tough nut to crack. So we'll have to wait and see. But, of course, the main issue, once again, with New York City FC, and it's from their supporters, is, of course, a stadium that they can call their own, a stadium that they can call their own at home. And once again, it's a situation where you have to say is that, you know, that's the big question mark, isn't it? And once again, it's a situation where the fans are upset because, once again, there is no stadium to call home. Well, if you want to say they're playing at Yankee Stadium, that's really not a home. That's not a soccer stadium. We're talking about a stadium that is meant for the game of soccer, to be played for the game of soccer. And once again, a situation has shown that that's the only places they can play, or a venue that's smaller, kind of like what they've done for Open Cup games over at, you know, at St. John's University. And that's still not good enough, in my opinion. But, you know, once again, CONCACAF basically threw it into the face of NYCFC and said, no, you cannot play your Champions League home match at a baseball stadium. You have to play it at Red Bull Arena. And even though we have seen, of course, you know, AC Milan and Inter Milan playing at the San Siro, we have seen Bayern Munich and 1860 Munich play at the same stadium. No longer, now 1860 Munich no longer plays in that in the Allianz Stadium in Munich, Germany. But then again, and you also see now the New York Jets, New York Giants, they play at MetLife Stadium. The Los Angeles Lakers, Los Angeles Clippers, they play, you know, in the same arena at Staples Center. And I always found that interesting how you can fit three professional sports teams in one arena. Clippers, the in hockey. It's pretty interesting when, you know, how do you fit all these games, these home games, on, you know, their respective calendars, and then you can still find a way to add these other events to be played at, whether it be, of course, you know, college basketball tournaments, you know, a concert, a rodeo, you know, even the WWE, the World Wrestling Entertainment. I mean, that's just unbelievable what they can do, and just interesting to watch. But anyway, trying to get Michael Ander on the phone, you know, things have happened. You never know. He's been always been on the show, and it's been, you know, well, and let's see if we do have him on there. And I believe we have on from Blue City Radio, Michael Anderer joining us right now. So, Michael, welcome back. I know a big Champions League match on Wednesday, but let's preview the MLS season going forward with some of the changes that have been made, not just in the coaching ranks and as well as the front office. Do you feel, and not counting the San Carlos first leg victory, do you feel this will be the same old New York City FC, or do you feel there are other changes that are going to be coming?
Hey, Dan, thanks again, and my apologies for the technical difficulties in jumping on. No, I think this is going to be the same old NYCFC. I think this is going to be a team that that already showed in their first call it their preseason game. It was really the, you know, the first leg of the Champions League that they showed that they could get the job done, and they could roll with the punches. So as much as we saw NYCFC kind of struggle in the in their intricacy in passing, NYCFC didn't have those same mistakes.
No, I agree with you there. I think what Delea has done, I believe he's fortified the club. I think he's found a way to keep them together. And as you've said, as we've said in the review show on Friday of that first leg, he's a 4-4-2 guy, but he realized that a 4-3-3 is more the niche. Was head coach.
Sorry, Dan, you broke up on that last comment, but no, I think. He's a 4-4-2 guy, but he played the 4-3-3, and what we saw with the strength of NYCFC's roster was Alex Ring, who in the past was a one of the most dominant holding midfielders in MLS. For a year and a half, he moved up to play an eight. He actually played where some teams like to play the double pivot with two holding defensive midfielders. Ronnie played the double eight, where he had Ring and Park side by side in an advanced positions, which allowed the James Sands to just hold and control in front of the defense. So that's that. Definitely, Ronnie showing his coaching acumen very early on in the season.
I agree with you. I mean, usually you don't see that when you have someone like that in an advanced role. But do you feel that's his own form of pressing for Delea? Do you feel like having Sands moved up, you know, more into an offensive role, even though he probably would like some defense as well, do you feel that, you know, you're pressing more offensively than a normal, let's say, a 4-2-3-1?
Yes, I do. I do think that that's what we've seen. Now, again, we'll have to see if that was just specific to the opponent, or if that was going to be his game plan moving forward. But we definitely saw in the first game versus San Carlos a lot of counter pressing from NYCFC, and it was effective. It definitely got the San Carlos team off its game, and it resulted in a lot of turnovers in the middle third.
With this new head coach, are you expecting Heber to be more of an attack-minded player, more of, you know, maybe scoring more goals than what we've seen so far from his first year last year? I mean, for him to get a hat trick, and I know one of them was a penalty, but still, though, for him to get a hat trick in the CONCACAF Champions League down in Costa Rica, do you think this system and the way Delea manages this club, do you think Heber is going to be more goal scoring minded than, let's say, what happened last year?
No, I don't think I'm going to say more. I think it's what kept Hébert from scoring more goals last year was fitness, and that's going to be his challenge. That's going to be the thing that he's going to have to do as a player to elevate his game. Is he's going to have to stay healthy for an entire season, or as healthy as he can be. A lot of his injuries have been muscle related, so it's not like he's getting knocked over and he's busting up a knee. This is soft tissue, and that's usually just a matter of what he does to recover and how much he knows his body to make the right choices on the field.
It'd be very interesting to watch and see what's going forward. Majority of this roster, of course, still intact. Not too many changes have been made. Obviously, like we've already talked about, Keaton Parks now officially part of the roster for NYCFC. Originally was on loan. How important do you think he will be, now that he is permanently a part of this club, that could give them possibly a good run in the playoffs?
Well, I think we saw that importance in game one. We saw that importance because you were able to start the game without Maxi Morales. And in the last two seasons, that would be something that NYCFC would struggle with. There'd be times where NYCFC would look completely lost without Morales on the field. Even if just as simple as being able to hold possession through the midfield, it would get from the back line to the midfield and then it would stop and get turned over. Parks and Ring did a very good job in being able to possess and not do anything, too tricky, not doing anything that required a lot of skill. It was just being smart players and playing the simple game, knowing where the ball is going to go before it hits your foot. Those are those things that it's easy to talk about, but until you see it in action, that's when you remember how special of a talent it is.
I agree with you there. I mean, hopefully he'll be on the radar for the U.S. men's national team. Talking about homegrown players, now obviously the New York Red Bulls are very proud of, developing their own players. Obviously, we can go down the line like Sean Davis, Omir Fernandez, Tyler Adams, Ryan Mara, even though he was basically drafted out of Fordham, but technically he's, local. When you've got a kid like Hack, who was going through the motions and playing for the the youth teams of NYCFC. I mean, that's a great thing to have. He's only had a spurt of minutes here and there. What is it about him that you think might have a bigger role, or do you think he's just going to sit back and he's just going to have to watch what's going on? Because you also have another kid that was signed in Tavon Gray, the defender, who is just only 17. I mean, Hack is 18, but if you're good enough, you're old enough.
I think we're going to – I mean, if I was to predict, I think we'd see more of Gray than we would of Hack. I think there's just too much congestion in the midfield. That's just based on what I've seen in what's been used in the past. I know Dyla has talked about how he loves the youth of the younger players to push and challenge, and I think he wants to reward that with minutes, but he's also got to make choices as far as wanting to win games and get the results. The big key was that that you're going to see Joe Scally get minutes this year because this is going to be his last year with the team. He's going to be going on to Germany at the end of this season. So, you're going to see James Sands, develop. James Sands is a guy who I think if he stayed healthy last year would have turned a lot of heads and probably would have gotten more opportunity. I mean, he actually trained in the off season in Germany as well. So there's talent that's getting recognized. And I think from what I've seen, I think we still need to see a little bit more of Hack and what he can do to demonstrate that he can elevate his game to the midfield to compete, because you have guys like Juan Pablo Torres who is a quality player was a quality player with the youth national team and just never had the opportunity with NYCFC.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit tough to see, and let's hope that some of them do get their opportunities and get some minutes and go forward. Before we say goodbye, Michael, you know, 25 years of Major League Soccer, before NYCFC was around for like those past five seasons, I mean, you've seen a lot of MLS. What memory, whether it be local or, you know, national, do you remember from MLS that you enjoyed watching or you keep, you know, that you can remember that was enjoyable to watch?
I'm going to go back to a game that took place in Red Bull Arena, and it was LA Galaxy versus Red Bull, and Tim Cahill scored the game-winning goal. It was a wet game, pouring rain, and, you know, part of how I got started in media was I was a photographer. So I actually, one of my favorite images that I ever captured was Cahill scoring the goal and then coming over and cheering with the fans. And that was memorable, not only because of my personal experience with that game, but it was a beautiful combination of the greats from the United States. So Landon Donovan being on that squad and being being able to talk to Landon after that game, but then also having the international greats, Thierry Henry and Tim Cahill, you know, playing with Red Bull. I think that's when the league is at its best. And I know it's a criticism that Red Bull gets right now. Look, you can point the finger at NYCFC just as well. NYCFC is not sitting there. When we talk about Hebert as the you know, the best player in NYCFC, and he's not a name that anybody knows, then that's a problem. And you do still need to have that balance where you're gonna be bringing in these known names. Chicharito in LA is a perfect example of that, in seeing what that does to drive the eyes to the television and to light that fire in a fan base. So that was that's one of my personal experiences. That was a top game.
Yeah, it really was, and I remember that the great finishing goal and stoppage time and getting the full 3 points in a downpour. Michael, I'll see you during the year. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you on Friday night for the second leg review, and good luck for the season.
Thanks so much, Dan. And again, my apologies. Talk to you soon.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. Thank you very much, Michael. It's Michael Ander, Blue City Radio, as we preview New York City FC. Now, of course, it's time to preview the New York Red Bulls. Of course, you can listen to the Red Bull Hour here on the 46 Fire American Soccer Show, the second hour of the two-hour show. Joining me right now, brand new to the show, Michael Batista. He covers the New York Red Bulls for Red Bulls Nation, and that is a site that is a part of Sports Nation New York. Did I have that correct, Michael?
That is correct. It also goes by New York Sports Nation, but I think it goes by either way, too.
Yep. Well, you know, I went by through their Twitter account, so there you have it. Michael,
it's part of a
welcome
brand,
to the
you know?
Show for the very first time. Oh, of course. I understand. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, last year we had the we had an interesting season for the New York Red Bulls last year. Obviously, certain things did not go well. Some things did. Once again, the calendar year ended with the number 9. Of course, 1999 was the 7-25 record. The 2009 was the worst record below that. And, of course, even though this year, last year, 2019, they did make the playoffs in the in that jinx of a – you know, the number 9 ending in the calendar year. Still, though, they had a two-goal lead in halftime in the playoffs at Philadelphia, lost the lead, lost the playoff game in extra time. In your mind, do you think that the Red Bulls have survived that starting off this brand-new season, or do you think there's still going to be some problems in 2020?
Well, to start off, I could say as a hockey fan as well, I was never safe with that 2-goal lead. It just never felt the right way, but even against the Union, they're a tough team. And going into the playoffs, they might have made the playoffs. The team never really felt like it was kicking at full power, and especially the way they ended the season against Montreal in Montreal. you kind of had that feeling going into the playoffs too. It wasn't really that uplifting feeling that I think most fans wanted. To say they survived it is kind of, it's true, but it's not the best way to put it, because it feels as though going into this season, it's almost as if we've woken up and the clock radio is playing Cher, I've Got You Babe, because it feels like we're just doing the same thing as last year. We've lost pieces, the team's lost pieces, but it feels like we've either brought in just enough to be at the same place while not bringing in enough to change drastically. Look at it like this. You know, Josh Sims, he's back. I'm happy to see that he's back with the team. We've lost Bradley Wright Phillips, who left the team to go to LAFC. But to be perfectly honest, while historically that's a big deal in the short-term history, he wasn't really around that much last year. I think the biggest thing he did was he scored a game-tying goal against Atlanta. I think that was his biggest contribution last year. And, of course, we lost Luis Robles, but I'm pretty confident in the goalkeepers that Red Bull has now, that I don't think that it's going to be a killer that we lost him to Inter Miami. Did they survive?
I agree with
yes,
you.
Yes, but, yeah. Mm-hmm. They survived, but nothing's really changed. It's just the same thing going forward.
Well, let me go to the goalkeeping position with you. I do agree with you. I think right now Ryan Mara, in my opinion, well, hopefully the injury is not too severe from the last preseason game against Sporting Kansas City and Tucson, but, you know, Ryan Mara, there's really no drop-off in my opinion. He's going to be solid in goal now that Robles is probably going to finish his career with Inter Miami. Starting this season. I don't know how much longer Luis is going to have, but definitely this will be probably the last time he'll probably sign an MLS contract. But I don't have a problem with him in goal. What I do have a problem with at the moment, it's the back line. I think our center backs are solid enough in both Long and Parker. Kyle Duncan could either be a left fullback or a right fullback, but I just feel like the opposite section of the fullback department, that's the big question mark that the Red Bulls are going to have. If you're going to have Kyle Duncan as your right fullback, who's going to be on the left? If Duncan's on the left, who's going to be on the right? And that is the one section I believe that this Red Bull team is going to have problems with. What do you see?
I'm actually the opposite of that. I like the talent on our back line. I think that it's an underrated back line at that. I think that Tarek, Parker, and Long are some of the best defenders that we have, are some of the better defenders right now. I think that my biggest concern is the exact opposite of the field, the forwards, the strikers even, because to me, we have two people that are my age who haven't really proven themselves, and a 19-year-old from Denmark. That's where I'm mostly concerned, because I'm not really sure that a team can sustain itself where its highest goal scorer is Daniel Royer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Royer, yeah, another year older, another year of, you know, does he have enough to score 10 to 15 goals a year? I mean, that's the big question mark, isn't it, right now with Royer, because he is getting a year older. And I also feel, and I'll go along with you on this, I think right now, midfield-wise, it's crowded. You brought back Josh Sims on loan from Sunderland. I mean, not from Sunderland, from Southampton. Florian Vallot, who had, in my opinion, Florian Vallot had an excellent preseason, scored 3 goals in 5 of the preseason matches, the 2 that was in Florida, and then, of course, the last one against Sporting Kansas City in Tucson. I just feel like you're going to have to put one of these midfielders, if you're going with a 4-4-2 or the 4-2-2-2, you're going to have to put an extra midfielder and put him up top with either Barlow or Brian White, depending on if both will play at the same time or if one of the two will be up top. I don't know what's going to be going on here with Chris Armas, but I will say this, though, is that I think one of these midfielders is going to have to move up and move up top to be an attacking pairing with Brian White. Is that how you feel?
I feel the same way, yeah. And to go on what you said prior about the midfield being crowded, I was very happy to – well, I shouldn't say happy, but when Derek Etienne did finish his loan with FC Cincinnati and then came back, I was just thinking to myself, I really like Etienne, but he's going to just not do anything for us because there's too much here, especially once we start bringing in, like, people from Rebels 2 and such. And I'm happy to see him go to Columbus Crew. Then there's people that – there's other players that we sent Bezecourt to Miami FC, I think. And I thought we were going to do more. I thought we were going to clear up that midfield a bit more. And now that we haven't, there is a lot of talent that's probably going to become Red Bull 2 talent over the season and develop, which is always good. But at the same time, it's just – I'm curious to see who's going to step up into the whatever line Chris Armas makes it, whatever kind of setup he does. And also, what, like you said before, I'm really happy Florian has come back from the second leg injury in 2 years, and he's looking great in the preseason. Really happy to see him get back on the field in Harrison.
Oh, me too. But isn't it weird to say, you know, Florian Vallot, and don't get me wrong, like, I agree with you. I like him too. I think he's definitely going to be very dangerous. But isn't it weird to say that Florian Vallot is the veteran goal scorer, or at least the veteran player that you hope to come back from injury to give purpose and presence to an offense that, you know, that still, I mean, you know, goal scoring wise, there's still question marks.
It does seem weird. I can't necessarily say it makes me feel comfortable, but at the same time, I'm not going to say it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just a very odd feeling because we did lose a bunch of pieces, and while we did bring in stuff, it's just we have all the pieces here. It's just funny to see who's going to stand out. And when I look at him, it's been so long since we've seen him play at full capacity, because I don't even want to say last year was full capacity because he was – still getting over his right leg before his left leg went down, you know? So he might just be the guy to come back and show off and say, holy cow, look at him go.
Could be. It could be. I mean, it'd be very interesting to watch. Let's talk about some of the other pieces that are not here anymore either. Once again, both Michael Murillo and Kamar Lawrence were sold to Anderlecht in the Belgian First Division. The Jupiler League, you know, look, not saying that I was happy to see Murillo leave. I'm one of those that was a firm believer that he is a part of this team, that he should have stayed forever. I know he had aspirations to go to Europe, but, you know, the one negative I have with Murillo, which I'm glad he's not here anymore in that sense, I'm not saying I wanted him gone, but in some ways – I am glad he's not here anymore, because I'll tell you why, because I think he shows too much immaturity and he allows the smallest of things to bother him. And then, you know, in my opinion, one of the best right backs in this confederation just loses all concentration. And now he's got his wish. Now he's over in Belgium. But, you know, that's the one negative I had with Murillo. And now, of course, with Kamar gone, I don't think he qualified for a UK passport, or at least a UK work permit, I should say, to play in the Premier League, or at least into one of these leagues in England. You know, losing that type of fullback that has the guile, the speed, the determination, you know, that's where you get the little question mark that I have for the back line this year. How do you feel about those two?
Well, it always hurts to lose two players who not only have national team experience but have become intrinsic in your back line. With Murillo, I do think that he had those moments of sort of getting flustered and letting emotions and the whole situation get to him. But at the same time as well, I had enough hope in him to see if over time he got over it. I thought that after a while it might just be something that moves away. And he just keeps going, and then he could just get to playing. And for the most part, I think he did, but there were spurts of it. I'm happy to see someone like Mandla Egbo. I'm probably butchering that name, but the person we got from Germany, come in and try and fortify that with hopefully some – I don't know much about him, but I'm happy to see someone else come in trying to work with that. Plus, we do have, like I said, talent before at the back line. But I am a bit cautious because I did like Kamar Lawrence. I think that he was a true leader on that back line. And it's going to be interesting to see who steps up for that. If it's going to be someone – if it's going to – they already have enough leaders, but is someone going to fill that role or are people going to expand their roles?
We'll see what happens there. Let's go to Kaku now. Definitely, you know, last year was a crazy year, a strange year. Whether it be through him or his agent through social media, trying to, of course, you know, at the time, try to leave the Red Bulls for going to Club America and Liga MX. Of course, now it looks like he's permanently going to be with us or be with the Red Bulls for the, you know, whatever is left on his contract, and maybe he'll stay a little longer. We'll see what happens. But, you know, are we going to see a better 2020 now that Kaku is bought in and a part of this club, attacking-wise?
I'm not necessarily sure that's going to be the case. I think that, once again, he's talented. He's always been talented. I'm just kind of worried to – I'm worried about the whole – it's hard for me to go into talking about him without bringing up how he acted last year with – we want to talk about emotions. We all remember the Sporting Kansas City game, and now we have – all those stories about how, Kaku to Club America, Kaku this. If he's permanently here, is it going to be the same sort of push from him, or is it going to be a mellow out? I don't know, and I'm not going to even try to attempt to know. I think that I'm hopeful that he can just play the game and play it well, like the player that we signed, like the player we know he can be. But at the same time, that whole Sporting Kansas City thing does make me wonder of what kind of player he really is.
Understand that. I mean, that's the one thing I'm hoping for right now is that we don't have that tantrum, shall we say, of Kaku, and hopefully he's learned his lesson. The only thing you have to say is you hope he's learned his lesson and that, you know, this will never, ever happen again and going forward. Let's go to some other homegrowners. Obviously, Ben Mind, who gave us a taste of something to enjoy back in 2018, of course, when he scored his first MLS goal within the first 5 to 10 minutes of the match against the Portland Timbers in that home opener. It hopefully, you know, whatever injuries he has received, hopefully they're gone. Hopefully he's recovered from them. Do you think we might finally see what Ben Mines can really do for a full year?
I really think this is the year that he comes out swinging. I do think that this is the perfect time for him. Like you said, that midfield is crowded. We don't know how the midfield is going to shape up. But if Ben Mines wants to be the player that we know that I want him to be, that you want him to be, that he thinks he can be, this is the year to do it, especially when the stage is this crowded. I do hope that with the two young players that that were called up from Red Bulls 2 this year, give me 1 second, Chris Lima, with Chris Lima and Jared Stratt, who they were called up officially signed, I'm hoping that players like them and Ben Mines can become sort of tangential to one another, especially with someone like him who, if he has a coming out party on the field, you want to expect someone younger who's just getting their first taste of, like, pro contract football. You want someone right next to them to feed off that. And I think that could be perfect for what this team needs.
All right. So hang on 1 second. We're going to allow a caller to join in. And hopefully he'll have a question for us, 973-287. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. This is my first time calling the show, but I've heard about the show for quite a while. And I know with the season coming up, what do you think of your take on the Red Bulls this season? I'm a longtime Red Bulls fan, since even when they were the Metro Stars. I mean, they need to work on stuff like the last year, which didn't turn out to be so well.
Well, you know, I'll answer first, and then I'll let Michael give his answer. You know, right now, this is the first time. In my opinion, I think this is the first time where there are a lot of question marks right now, because at the moment, as we've already said, there's no more Bradley Wright Phillips. Well, listen, look, we want to be honest here. We don't want to sugarcoat certain things here. I mean, the truth is that you've lost a lot of veteran players here. You know, there's no more Bradley Wright Phillips. There's no more Kamar Lawrence. There's no more Michael Murillo. Do I feel some of the players that are coming up through Red Bulls 2 can hold their own? You would say in the USL Championship League they will, but some of them are unproven, but some are. There's going to be some question marks on the back line, even though Michael has already said that he feels that the back line will probably surprise a lot of people. There's a lot of, logjam in midfield, and even though Brian White scored 10 goals last year before he got hurt, we got to see how he's going to react, you know, playing 90 minutes now for a full season, and can he add on not just to equal the 10 goals, but can he go more than 10 goals? And Tom Barlow, will he come off the bench? Will he start instead of Brian White? So in my view, while there's good, solid young talent here, there's still question marks for 2020. Michael, your thoughts for that, for what our caller has asked for.
This team is full of question marks. This team's pretty much a pop quiz. We don't know what's going to happen with this team. I think the thing I keep telling people is that they're going to finish – I think it's a mid-table team that's going to do well in one of the tournaments that it's in, whether it be U.S. Open Cup or Leagues Cup. It's going to do fairly well in one of those, but finish mid-table during the season. There's going to be I think that it's going to be the same sort of team where – While I do like the back line, I don't like the attacks. I don't like the attackers. I don't like the players that are meant to get into the opposing defense's heads and make them think they're going to score. And no matter how good a defense is, if they're going to keep getting pressured, it's going to bend no matter how good they are. I'm worried about that, and I'm worried about overall if things start going bad, what are the young guys going to do? These players are professional, I understand that, but with so many young players, if things start out bad like they did last year, where it's, you know, historic losing streaks for the franchise, or a star player going down, just like making a next man up mentality, what's that going to do for this team? And that does worry me, but at the end of the day, I think that it's going to kind of all even out towards the end and finish like mid-table, and I don't either. That's a seventh spot and get into the playoffs, or an eighth spot and miss the playoffs, and that's just going to be normal.
All right.
Well, thank you for calling it. And just before you leave, who's this and where are you from?
Oh, I'm sorry. The name is Louis from New Jersey. I've heard about this show for quite a while, but I was waiting for at the start of the season to, you know, come and ask the questions, because the season starts now.
No problem at all.
Oh boy. I have a show of my own,
on
actually.
On Sunday,
if
actually.
If you're interested. Yeah. I have a show of my own, actually.
Okay.
All right. The show is called The Enhanced Sports Show. We're on Saturday afternoons, 5 to 7 East Coast time. If you wish to call in, the number is 512-543-4662. And there's no pound.
All right. Well, That's wonderful. Okay, Lewis, thank you again. And if you want to call back, please do. And hopefully you will read Red Bulls Nation or Once the Metro. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lewis from New Jersey calling in. Big Red Bulls fan, of course. And that wasn't so bad. I have to be honest, Michael, sometimes I cringe a little because you don't know who's trying to crank call you during these live streaming shows. And at the same time, that's why this is a live streaming show. This is why it's not WFAN, which they have all the machines to make sure that you can screen the callers. But anyway.
They got thumb buttons there.
There you go. You see what I'm talking about? Yeah, but we had a little fun. We had a good, honest question. Yeah, you know how it is. So, Leagues Cup. The Red Bulls have apparently have qualified for the League's Cup with the this tournament, which is clubs from MLS taking on clubs from Liga MX in Mexico. And I've talked with those that follow Liga MX, where they believe that they believe that this League's Cup will be successful. They believe that this League's Cup was going to be successful, that it's going to be a positive. I feel like only the CONCACAF Champions League is the real success when you're facing clubs from Liga MX, when you're going for a continental club championship. Do you see the League's Cup being a successful tournament and surpassing what Superliga was supposed to be many, many years ago?
I think it can be. I want the CONCACAF Champions League to be the be-all, end-all of international competition on this continent. But the problem is CONCACAF doesn't want it to be, it seems like, at times, with how poorly it sometimes markets it, or how it took them, a week prior to the competition to get a TV deal in America. It just feels as though they are shooting themselves in the foot every year in new and innovative ways. With the League's Cup, when you have two leagues that are successful, you have MLS, which, you know, they have a marketing arm, and you have Liga MX, which is one of the most watched leagues. I think it is the most watched league in North America. You can't look away at the fact that if you put the mega powers together, you don't know what you're going to get. And I think it can totally be successful. The problem is I don't want it to just be a tournament for a tournament. I would rather this be something with stakes on the line. It shouldn't be the teams that don't make CONCACAF Champions League go to this if it's not like that with Liga MX, because Liga MX teams, it's going to be their top six teams. For MLS, it's like their 4 through 10 teams. And that bothers me because it makes it not seem like it's the best teams it can be. But I understand why they have to. However, you give it a little time, maybe this gets a Champions League slot to it. Maybe it gets better. Maybe it'll get a better finalist prize money, better prize money for the finalists, for the champions. Who knows? But I do think this can usurp the CONCACAF Champions League as the top tournament in this country for teams. I keep trying to say Nations League because I'm so fixed on that.
Well, you know, Nations League, that's going – I think the Nations League has been successful, for the Caribbean teams, the Caribbean nations that are, trying to get more games in. So, at least international games. So at least it's been successful there.
Go Montserrat.
Well, personally, I think – yeah, but look at – but honestly, I think CONCACAF truly wants the Champions League to be a better tournament. The problem has been, of course – the interest stateside when it comes to, I guess, the, shall we say, those that normally don't pay attention to the CONCACAF Champions League, that they only pay attention to the UEFA Champions League, or those that only pay attention to the Copa Libertadores down in South America. So I know CONCACAF is trying to make it better. I will say this, though. There's one or two ways that this is going to have to be fixed. Either they start in March, round of 16, and I guess they have to condense the scheduling because of, what happens when you get to the World Cup after 2022. Those summer tournaments are going to be coming in and everything. So you don't want that to be interfered with. Or does Major League Soccer, and I've said this in the past, now depending on what happens with the NFL and the CBA that they're negotiating with the players' union in their own league, because I've said after the Super Bowl is over with, which would be the first weekend in February, the next weekend, start MLS then you have 3 weeks at least of matches being, league games under those teams that have qualified for the Champions League. You get three games already under your belt, and then you have two in the round of 16, and then you'll have a better feel when you face your next opponents, whether it be from Liga MX or not, into the quarterfinals around March. So that's what I've been saying. And, of course, we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. Of course, with the NFL, we don't know what they're going to do with their, 17th week game and then more playoff teams. you know, that could put the kibosh on it. I don't know. That might ruin that idea. But, you know, that's just an idea to talk about. What do you think about that?
I like the idea of doing the XFL AAF mentality of right after the NFL starts, you go in there, you fill the void. I do worry about how that would work for, look, me and you, we're from New York, New Jersey. It's awful around here at this time.
No,
now,
yeah.
I'm not saying it's impossible to play around. I'm not saying it's impossible. They've been doing it for like 100 years in England. But at the same time, it's just when you're not bred, like when the sport's not bred for you, like when you're not, when it's not a top sport in this country, you're not like ingrained with it. I'm curious to see how people would come out for those first few weeks and what sort of ingenuity people, the league and teams would do to like get people to come to games. I can envision a lot of things, but I do think that's probably the way they should go. It's scary to think about, but it's smart money would tell you to do that. Because going into Champions League the way it does now, not only does it hurt Champions League where people don't care about it, it probably hurts the teams too more than anything, because you have Liga MX who are in the heights of their Clausura tournament. They're getting right towards like the end of that, or they're like right in the height of it. But MLS, they're busy playing games against USL sides in the desert. So it's kind of an unbalanced playing field there.
It is. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're trying to not only help MLS, but at the same time, you're trying to help the play and you're trying to help the popularity of the Champions League get bigger and better. So let's hope, let's go through there. The big move, I would say, of the season has been in the front office. Kevin Thelwell, who was at the time the director of sport for Wolverhampton Wanderers in the Premier League, has now accepted a deal and is now officially the head of sport for the New York Red Bulls, meaning that Dennis Hamlett right now, if you, you know, say what you want, you know, he is the sporting director, but still though, let's be honest, two things. It sounds like it's a demotion, and at the same time, I think his job is on the line. What do you see from that?
Job's on the line, but it's, I'm curious to know where, I'm curious to see what kind of result gets you out of the hot seat in this situation. Because when you have so many square pieces and you have a circular hole, there's only so much you can do. And I don't want to just throw it on him. I don't want to make it seem like, well, you couldn't make this work. You're obviously bad at your job. No, it's very hard to make this work. It's hard to make any successful team work, let alone teams with question marks. And I don't want it to seem like it's a situation where, well, you couldn't do it now. Like, what are you going to do when we get better? And that's going to kind of make me kind of hesitant to be happy about any sort of thing that comes about when the season is towards its end and we see in a bigger picture how this whole thing turned out.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But still, though, something – There's something here that I really think that, and while, you know, look, you can't blame Dennis for not trying because he has, but you can ask the question about, has he done enough? And while, look, the Red Bull 2 situation, the Academy situation, they have shown plenty of success creating, developing, bringing up the talent, whether they get drafted into the system, whether they're from the local youth camps that get the opportunity to play at the training facility in East Hanover, to playing in Montclair State University at the soccer park, or getting their full long dream playing in Red Bull Arena. Still, though, they have not replenished bringing over free agents, or at least free agents that have the talent of what Sasha Kleischen has done here for the Red Bulls, what Dax McCarty did for the Red Bulls, what Daniel Royer has done for the Red Bulls, what Bradley Wright Phillips has done for the Red Bulls. If you want to say Luis Robles, look, Ryan Merritt is the next best thing, of course, so we're not worried about that. But then again, you ask the question, who's coming after Ryan Merritt? And while David Jansen's a nice pickup, still, though, that's the big question mark. And, of course, everyone is talking about as you were talking about, you know, Mathias Jorgensen, you know, is becoming the big signing from last year to play for the Red Bulls, when in fact all he did was play for Red Bulls 2 last year, so he can get acclimated with the system and acclimate on being an attacker. Does he have the ability? I think he has the ability. Can he finish? That is the question now, because he did not play in MLS. He was, if he did play, it'd be, you know, sparing minutes. What did you see?
He was in the, I think the first time he played was in the Champions League against Santos, and after that he was mostly with Red Bull 2. He was there like 4 times, something like that. He mm-hmm. It became a running joke with me and my buddy, where we we saw this headline. I forget where, but it was like one of the websites said Red Bull Stein Starlet Jorgensen. So we just kept saying, like, building him up, saying, "Oh, we got the starlet. We got this. We got this." And when he just didn't come, the joke just sort of like turned in on itself, because we're like, "Well, he's doing okay at Red Bull 2 up until they collapsed towards the end of the season, once Red Bulls kept robbing them a bit, or kept like taking away their key players." But I was happy with what I was seeing, but it was just, I thought it was going to be a bit more, but I guess I forgot, or I guess I just overlooked the fact that, oh wait, he's 18. He still has time to grow. I think that it might not be this year, but I don't think it's going to be this year. I think that he's going to see a bigger role. I don't think he's going to come into his own this year, and I think he's just going to split more time between the first and second team. But I think you got to give it one more year until he's the man, until on this team, until he's a bigger cog in this machine.
I agree with you there. All right, Michael. So let's go quickly to predictions, and I believe once again, you see the Red Bulls finishing as a mid-tier Eastern Conference table team. Is that correct? What do you see the positives and negatives here?
So I see this team finishing either seventh and barely getting in the playoffs, a New York Rangers situation as it would be, or they finish eighth and miss the playoffs. And I would not be upset at either of those. So long as the team doesn't look like it's playing defeatist football. As long as the team doesn't look miserable, it seems like it's trying. Because I think me and you could agree that their game, like, no matter what the sport is, no matter what the game is, there are times after a game where even after a win, the players just seem miserable. And I don't want it to seem like this year, as it's going on, where it's just a roller coaster. If it's roller coaster standings, the players just don't have it. I really hope that no matter what happens, the team shows it's making progress, feels good about what's happening. You don't want to feel good that you missed the playoffs, but like, you leave the season thinking, yeah, there's hope, no matter if it's seventh or eighth. And if they do make the playoffs, I very much expect it to be a quick exit, but that's fine, because they'd be playing like a 2 or 3 seed. And I'm going to go one step ahead of you. Because they're going to be in the U.S. Open Cup in the fourth round, because they split it up this year, because you know me, I'm a big U.S. Open Cup. I'd say they get...
Yes, exactly.
I'd say they get 2 wins in that, and then crash out in the round of 16, or the round of 8. I think that they knock off 2 wins against the team that does well, and that's already played a game in their round 4. They beat someone in round 16, then they'll probably lose to USL side in the round of 8 for all I know, but they're not going to get past that. And I think they can do okay in League Cup. I think that they can look confident against certain teams, because knowing where we finished, we're going to be kind of low, so we should be against a lower Liga MX side, which should be pretty fun to watch.
Should be, and we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. I do agree with you. I think they'll be a mid-tier team. Will they barely make the playoffs? Maybe by a point. It all depends on where they finish. I could see them seventh. I could also see them eighth. I could see them below that playoff line. I can see them above the playoff line, but just barely. There's going to be a lot of question marks, like we've already said, start the season. And until they answer those questions, as of now, I'm not saying I'm skeptical. I'm just saying that right now there's going to be a lot of question marks. And until those questions are answered, we don't know what this Red Bull team is going to do and where they're going to finish. So I will go with you. And I'm saying it's a safe bet. You'd be right. Right now, as I see it, to start the season, there'll be a mid-table finish in the East. Will they barely make it in? Yes. Will they barely make it out? Yes, because right now they're teetering, even though they haven't kicked off yet to start the regular season. March 1st at 1 o'clock, Red Bull Arena. They're going to take on, shall we say, a more dysfunctional team in FC Cincinnati. I can't believe what's going on over there. In their second year of MLS, they've lost another head coach because he resigned because of some sort of racial slur he used. I don't know what that was, but that has become a big mess in the Queen City in Ohio.
It's going to be like what happened with San Jose, where you and I, and I think other people, made the joke last year of when it was similar of just historic low, like they kept losing games. We go, this is now they're going to turn around and just win the MLS Cup. It's just that team where no matter where they are, you think they're going to end up in the opposite direction. So once they start their home, once they start at home this Sunday, like they did against San Jose last year, they're probably going to look good. And you're going to think, huh, maybe I was wrong. Maybe this is going to be fine.
And then the bottom fell out. So I'll have to wait and
see.
Michael, thank you exactly. Michael, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you. I'll see you on Sunday. And yeah, have a good afternoon, sir. You take care. Or evening, I should say.
Have a good night. Yeah, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you. You too. Have a good
I'll
night.
See you Sunday.
Yep, I'll see you on Sunday. It's Michael Batista for Red Bulls Nation, part of New York City Sports Nation, as he covers the New York Red Bulls for them. And that will do it for the 2020 MLS season preview shows. All of the clubs that you want to know, to learn, to find out through these experts. Once again, if you for those clubs that are being covered by SB Nation sites, please go to them. Go to SB Nation and click on for the different sports. If you want to know about Major League Baseball, you go to baseball. The NFL, the NBA, the NHL, boxing, wrestling, MMA, and of course soccer. You go to the MLS clubs links and go ahead and have some fun. Thank you once again to Jason Anderson from Black and Red United on DC. Thank you once again to Jake Catanese from the Bent Musket on the New England Revolution. Thank you to Matt Ralph from the Brotherly Game on the Philadelphia Union. And thank you to Blue City Radio's Michael Ander on New York City FC. And once again, thank you to Michael Batista joining me to preview the New York Red Bulls. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. As always, please enjoy your football. Join me this coming Friday night, CONCACAF Champions League Round of 16 Second Leg Review. And, of course, next Monday, we will preview the USL Championship League with those that follow their respective clubs and the league itself. Once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Take care. So long, and bye-bye for now.